Ephesians 1, verses 18 through 23. Having the eyes of your hearts enlightened, that you may know what is the hope to which he has called you, what are the riches of his glorious inheritance in the saints, and what is the immeasurable greatness of his power towards us who believe, according to the works of his great might, that he worked in Christ when he raised him from the dead and seated him at the right hand in the heavenly places, far above all rule and authority and power and dominion, and above every name that is named, not only in this age, but also in the one to come. And he put all things under his feet, and gave him as head over all things to the church, which is his body, the fullness of him who fills all in all.
Welcome to the Blue Collar Bereans Podcast, hosted by me, Nate Penley, Scott McGrady, pastor of North Valley Baptist Church. It is good to be back with you all again here in the saddle, ready to go, ready to talk about just where we are. I mean, we've had a little technical difficulties here with our podcast. You know, we're still trying to figure out some of the tech here. So this is our second try at our intro here. But I wanted to ask Pastor Scott, have you ever changed your mind on anything?
No, never.
Never. Just, you've had the same belief since you were straight out of the womb, ready to go, confident in what you believed. I mean, obviously that's not the case. I find on a daily basis, constantly reevaluating what I'm doing. My goodness, just learning that lesson as a parent has been something. I remember thinking before I had kids, I had it all figured out. You know, I was going to look like this. I was going to be the strict disciplinarian. This is what the house is going to look like. And man, seemingly I was even kind of proud after my first child. Like, yeah, I got this figured out and I got everything, you know, all squared away. And then God dropped twins in my lap and really threw a wrench for everything. Like, man, this is a lot harder than I thought. This is a totally different animal trying to be able to stay on top of everyone's little decision all at the same time. It's nigh impossible. And it's a lot messier than I thought. Even just applying that situation to where we are as a church, man, we find ourselves in a sticky situation now, in a sticky time. And I don't think things are always as black and white as we like them to be. And even from when we first started this podcast just a couple months ago, I think that I've been pushed and challenged in the way I've thought about church, authorities, government, my work sphere. So much of that is really being put to the test here. What is it that I believe? What is it that I believe, how we can operate in our authorities that are given? And as you just read from Scripture, going back to the fact that Christ is our supreme authority. He is Lord over all. He is sovereign over all creation. He is the head of the church. He is just not the head of the church, but the head of creation. And so always appealing to that ultimate authority, which I think, you know, before this all happened, I would have said that, but how that trickles down into the rest of our everyday life sometimes takes a little bit of poking and prodding and figuring out. If you had asked me in January of 2020 that this is where we'd be as a church, as a nation, as my family, where the school's going to be, how it's going to be playing out in the fall here, I would have never believed you. I would have said no way that we'll be where we are now. But certainly times are unique, which kind of brings us to what we want to talk about today. There was a statement that was just recently released, actually yesterday, by John MacArthur and Grace Community Church, talking about how they're going to go back to church despite the situation with their current government, which says they're not allowed to meet. Their governor is saying that churches are indefinitely off limits to meeting and trying to put down strange regulations, and even if they do meet, how they could meet, what they can and cannot do as part of worship, which is just something that if you had asked me that this would be happening in January of 2020, I'd be like, there's no way a governor would be bold enough to tell a church they can't sing during a church service. I mean, that is a bold move, and yet here we are. And there's a lot of facets to play into that, and we want to try to get into that a little bit today.
Not singing is among the least of things.
Right. But I think it does begs us the question to try and talk about, at least open up this conversation about who or what is our authority and defining authorities. And I think in this article that MacArthur wrote, he does a good job of pointing to three main authorities that are in our lives. He says one is the family, one is the state, and one is the church. And each is a sphere of authority with jurisdictional limits that must be respected. I think, you know, he makes a good biblical case for this, and I would have to agree. There are certain authorities that God grants us. And often, to me, it seems like in the current situation we are, the big appeal is, well, God grants these authorities, and according to Romans 13, he grants rulers and governors authority over you as the individual, and therefore whatever they say, if it's not necessarily, unless they're expressly telling you to do something that's against Scripture, then you must comply. That's generally the logic that we've been told and have been kind of coerced into complying with. And I'm not sure I buy that argument wholesale, and I don't think John MacArthur does either here.
I do think, though, it's interesting, and I think right to point out, as he does in this article, you know, who do we obey? When do we obey to the government? And he says, some will think such a firm statement is inexorable in conflict with the command to be subject to the governing authorities laid out in Romans 13 and 1 Peter 2. Scripture does mandate careful, conscious obedience to all governing authorities, including kings, governors, employers, and their agents. In Peter's words, not only to those who are good and gentle, but also to those who are unreasonable. And I think that's part of what we need to think through as we go through this. 1 Peter 2:18 says, servants, be subject to your masters with all respect, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the unjust. And I think that's, in some cases, been missing from some of the conversations that have been going on.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, even just to note, when he wrote that, the government system of that time was pretty wicked and awful. And he still encourages them to submit to that authority. It's God ordained.
Right. Then he says, however, while civil government is invested with divine authority to rule the state, neither of those texts, nor any other, grant civil rulers jurisdiction over the church. And that's where you were getting in as he talked about the different areas of authority, family, church, and government.
Right.
So then he says, when any one of these three institutions exceed the bounds of its jurisdiction, it is the duty of the other institutions to curtail that overreach. And so we've been working through where we were at the beginning of all this, saying, okay, we think it's reasonable to comply with the government. We gave reasons in our very first episode of why we did not think the government was overreaching its boundaries. We talked about the love for neighbor and care for others and what we had as information of the deadliness and the danger of this virus. And so by that, we were saying, okay, the government is not overstepping. For us to comply with the government here and not meet together as a church to meet, not really meeting, but to preach sermons online as each one watched in their own house, we didn't feel at that time it was violating Hebrews 10, saying that in that we were neglecting the gathering together.
And even then, it felt like when it first happened, there was a pretty standard measure that the government was applying on what felt like almost everybody at the time. When we first started, it seemed like it didn't matter who you were. I mean, it affected everyone, and it seemed like these mandates were happening to just about everyone across the board.
Right. The church wasn't being singled out.
Sure. At least it didn't seem that way. Even though there's an element of, you know, even just my personal experience being an electrician in a commercial industrial setting, you know, I did see how, and granted, no government is perfect. It's run by humans, so there's always going to be a certain element of corruption, even if it's on a small scale. And, you know, the way that these mandates came out declaring some things essential, some things not, certain things were declared essential for life to actually be sustained. And it seemed as if church was put into a category that was called non-essential. And as you said in our first episode, we certainly thought, well, hey, there really could be a serious risk of harming people if we don't apply by these rules, because they seem wise, at least at the very least, to give it some time and watch how things play out, which we did. But as they played out, I felt like as we got more information, there seemed to be some inconsistencies.
And there was a lot of flip-flopping that indicated political motives.
Sure.
Yeah, even with the doctors that were informing the federal government of things, you know, first saying, you know, don't wear masks.
Right.
And then we found a reason, no, you should be wearing masks. And these are the reasons why we originally said don't wear a mask, but now we should be wearing masks, even though we come to conclude that masks do nothing.
Yeah.
I like the example you gave with your line of work and times where you've worn masks for not little microscopic things to keep out, but
just dust.
Right.
Dust masks that are claimed to keep out 100% of dust. Let me tell you, I've worn masks. They don't keep out 100% of dust. I've been in dirty, dusty environments since I was 16, and cloth ones do nothing for dust, for starters. Even the little, the good quality, say 3M paper mask with the little nose foam that goes over the nose, and they have the wire that bends over pretty nicely. They work a little bit better, but guess what? Your lungs are going to be coated with white drywall dust at the end of the day.
But if you take your shirt and you make a mask out of it, it's going to keep a tiny little virus out.
Right. A microscopic virus.
And in fairness with this, as we've said before, you know, they were saying that, listen, you don't wear a mask to protect yourself. You wear a mask to protect others.
Sure.
And they've even said, really, it comes down to when you cough or sneeze to keep the projection going out as far. But again, it does still go out. It doesn't. Yeah. It may not go out as far, but it still goes out.
It still goes out through aerosol, just through breathing air. And so if you're in the same room with someone, mask or no mask, you're sharing the same air. You're sharing the same aerosol. And that idea is frustrating me. I don't have to be an epidemiologist to use common sense to realize that there's a certain element of this virus we cannot stop. And so the question to me does come down to, well, do we just stop life? Or there's an element of trusting God in the fact that I have to provide for my family. So I'm going to go to work. And if I get sick, I get sick. That's in God's hands. I shouldn't be stupid about it. I don't go around licking toilet seats. I don't ask you to directly cough in my mouth. I mean,
can you get the virus through licking toilet seats?
I mean, it was going around the internet when this first started. Teenagers were doing it. It was a toilet seat challenge.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that's a whole different animal in and of itself. But the point being that we shouldn't be dumb about this. And certainly we should care and love our neighbor to do our best to stop the spread. But as an individual, I feel like I do have the right that it's a God-given right to exercise my brain and use common sense to determine what is actually going to be safe here, and be willing to trust God in taking certain amounts of risk. Every day I get up out of bed, there's a certain amount of risk involved in living my life and going to work. I work with high voltage electricity, and it's a job that pays well enough that my wife can stay home, and I'm willing to take that risk working with high voltage electricity to provide for my family. And it's a calculated risk. Just as I think this virus kind of falls into that category of there's a risk involved. Sure, any virus is a risk, but I need to weigh the cost.
But even talk about how high of a risk is it? Again, at the beginning, I'm willing to say nobody knew. We understand this was a novel virus and get all of that.
Brand new to us. Never experienced anything like it before.
And so even that alone, you can understand the fear that would come from it.
Sure.
And the not understanding. But as time went on, you know, I think it was in April that out of California came a study saying how many more people had the virus than they knew.
Right. CDC is now saying the number of confirmed cases is like 10 to 15 times more than what we have confirmed that we know.
Right. And so, and even as we've been seeing too, as they've been talking about the, you know, coming out of shutdown and all these things, and now there's an increase again, and now we're scared, even though they said, you know, obviously coming out of lockdown, there would be an increase. We knew that was going to happen, and they talked about calculating that. But they're and at least here in Pennsylvania, they seem to be acting like they didn't expect there to be an increase. And, oh, no, now there's this increase. But with that, what they're not telling us is that the more we find out people have had it or do have it, that drives down the death rate.
Sure.
That says how much lower the death rate is. And so, and you don't hear that, though, in the news. You just hear this many people today are tested positive. And they're not saying what that does to the death rate, because that drives down the death rate and has shown that it's not more deadly than the flu. Sure, it's more contagious maybe than the flu, but it's not more deadly than the flu. We don't do this every year. We don't take these precautions yearly for the flu.
And even if just when it comes to observing the scientific fact, I think it's fair to say that at the very best, this is still very much up for debate. And we can see it getting politicized, I think, both directions. And so the information, there's an element where, like, we have to use wisdom here. And it's sad to say, but we live in a day and age when we can't trust people. And we shouldn't trust people because of what we know about the human heart, which we talked about a little bit in our last episode, discussing the issue of the human heart. It's wicked and deceitful. And that includes even people that are in politics, people that are in the political scientific community, I'll say, who are in charge of the science, quote-unquote scientific side of our state here, that are making much of these mandates. But I think to kind of put that aside, because what I'd really love to talk about, there's certainly room for debate on what is the best choice for wisdom for us. But let's talk about the biblical mandate part, because even when this first started, there was something that didn't sit well with me, with the fact that, okay, there's this virus, it could be really bad, we really should do all this stuff. But then the governor stepped in here in our state in Pennsylvania and said he made a list of essential and non-essential personnel and required people to stay home. There's something about that that didn't sit well with me from the very beginning. And even in my personal experience, I worked for a job. I worked for a company that supplies labor and maintenance to a much, much larger company that has enough money to go down and lobby to political activists down in Washington to be able to get the construction for their job site deemed essential. So when this first happened, Pennsylvania said construction was deemed non-essential. Construction, new construction. And there was some lobbying happened that allowed my particular job that I was on to continue working even into the pandemic. It was declared essential, and I got a paper to put in my car and drive around the road that said I was allowed to drive to and from work because my job was declared essential. You know why it was declared essential? Because if this job didn't get done, the company that I was working for had enough money to go lobby and declare the small construction job that I was on. They declared it essential so that they could get one of their machines back up and running, because if they didn't get this machine back up and running, they were going to lose millions of dollars. So I saw firsthand how certain people, even though at the time we all thought this virus was a major, major serious thing that everyone was going to die from, my life was put on the line, quote unquote, to stay into work during the pandemic to get this machine up and running so that this company did not lose millions of dollars. And they spent a good chunk of money lobbying to make that so. So there's an element where I'm looking at this, and they're the governors, as I understand American politics and what is our authorities, this governor stepping outside of his given authority and telling us what is essential, what is not essential, telling us as a church we cannot meet. Now, there's an element of wisdom where we didn't know what was going to happen, so we didn't meet. But I still think it's caused me to think through the fact that would we have been wrong to say, Governor, you don't have the right to tell us we can't meet. We're going to not meet because we think it's a wise thing to do. We think what you're counseling us to do is good and wise. But you don't have the right to tell us we cannot meet as a church, because our sphere of sovereignty comes from Christ himself, who commands the church to do specific things. That's something that I've been struggling and kind of working through, is who is our authority? And when it comes to matters of quote-unquote civil disobedience, would something like that fall into the category of civil disobedience when a governor says he has authority to tell us where we can and cannot go? the way I read the Constitution, he does not have that authority. Laws have to come through legislation. And he did not legislate that. He's stepping outside of his boundaries of authority to tell us what we can and cannot do. And our state isn't even as bad as some other ones. But there's some things that have bothered me from the very beginning. And I feel like if we don't understand where authority comes from, we don't think through these issues, they're going to continue to grab more power. And that is something that I think we need to think through.
And just for clarification, there is given to him a place in emergency situations that have emergency authority.
Sure.
To give time for legislation to happen.
Sure.
So when things are happening so fast that there's no time to make legislation, he has that authority. But once the time's been given that legislation can be made, it's supposed to take away his emergency authority.
Right.
Now, there was that whole issue where both the House and the Senate in Pennsylvania overwhelmingly voted against him because he was not giving back his authority after that time had passed.
Right.
And then the Pennsylvania Supreme Court upheld him to have that authority, which is a little frustrating.
A little. Just a little. But even at that, so we can see there's a vying for power. And the question, who has the power? Who gives us power? I feel like that's the root of our issue here. And touching into what MacArthur says here, understanding who gives the power? It's Christ. And he gives certain spheres of sovereignty. And me as the head of my family, it is my job to train my family in the way they are to go, to make sure that I provide what is necessary for them, to provide their needs. And it is also important, I think, for me as the head of the family, to discipline the family when they're out of line. And yet I do that while respecting to my authority, which ultimately is Christ, but there's other spheres that go ahead of me. And so we have the church, which is my next authority. We operate under a local church system, and we certainly do encourage church membership. If you're going to be out there, you need to be a member of a church, because that's part of the accountability that happens is through membership. And then beyond that, you know, God has given us the state. And as I've been engaging with Romans 13, I mentioned this in the last episode we did about how Romans 13 is not just descriptive, it's prescriptive. It gives a job for the government. They're there to uphold justice, to keep the peace. And God has granted them that authority. And so the fact that they're there, I think there is some room for debate as to how we abide to the best of our ability to these sovereign spheres that God's put us under. And I know there's some disagreement. I might even just mention this just as something for people to think through, because we mentioned here before the episode about how, you know, I read Romans 13 and it says, let every person be subject to the governing authorities. And so immediately I stop there and say, who is the authorities? Can we define that? I know we mentioned beforehand in the context he's writing, who is the Romans' authorities? It would be Caesar would be the ultimate. And then, you know, I don't know all of the ins and outs of Roman government, but I know he had lesser magistrates, going down the line. But ultimately, their ultimate authority was Caesar. So how does that apply to us? Do we have a Caesar? I would argue, no, we don't have a Caesar. I'm thankful we live in a government system that is a checks and balance kind of power system. But the way I understand it, as I've read through the Constitution recently, the thing that is supposed to be the unifying and power-separating device for our nation is the Constitution. The Constitution is what grants the executive its power, it grants the legislative branch its power, it grants the judicial branch its power, and they all have different jobs, and it's supposed to be a checks and balances kind of system. And from the get-go, it appeals to a higher authority as the standard for law. And so when I read Romans 13, subject to the governing authorities, well, what's my highest authority? I'm going to say it is the Constitution. That's my opinion. I'm willing to take criticism on this. As I said, you know, I mentioned, have you ever changed? I feel like I'm changing every day as I think through these issues. But right now I'm landing on the fact that I think the Constitution is our supreme authority, and there's trickle-down effect of different various amounts of authority for people underneath that, including the president, including the Supreme Court and the legislative branch, and then even down to our states. The Constitution is supposed to guarantee rights of states to have their own local government. And it seems like the smaller the laws, the more localized they should be. The bigger laws, like upholding justice from murder, from granting individual rights of freedom, you know, those are supposed to be foundational, written into the Constitution. But what the speed limit's supposed to be shouldn't be regulated by the federal government. It depends on what the road is like and how it was built by those local people. So there should be certain amounts of power granted to, you know, the more individualistic rights, so to say. So when I read this and it tells me that the Constitution is my ultimate authority, I go to that and I look at what our governor is doing and I say, well, he's not within his sphere of sovereignty per the Constitution, which is God ordained. So he's stepping outside of his bounds of authority and appealing to an act from 1955, which I've read. It's 11 pages long. Go read it. The Health Disease Prevention and Control Act of 1955. He appeals to that, saying that gives the Secretary of Health a certain amount of power, which I've read it, and it does not. People trying to put these mandates on us that I don't think are biblical. And so the issue here has been a debate over what is civil disobedience. So is it civil disobedience for me to ignore a command from a governor who is stepping outside of his sphere of sovereignty? I would argue no, it's not. It's not civil disobedience. It is me just using discretion. I read a blog by a guy earlier this week who talked about if a mailman shows up at your door and tells you you need to start eating Fruit Loops for the benefit of your health, you would pay him no attention. Because number one, is it not only crackpot idea to follow, he also doesn't have that authority to come and boss you around as a mailman. He has not been granted that authority. The governor has been granted authority. What is his authority? According to the Constitution, he does not have the right to quarantine the entire state. He does not have that power. He doesn't have the right, I think, also, especially, to regulate what is worship, how it can be done, how we are to live it out with each other. And so then I think it puts that into our camp of what is wise for us here at North Valley? What do we think is going to be the best for our community, for our standards? That's kind of where I'm landing on this at the moment. Like I say, I am open to pushback.
Right, and I land somewhere slightly different, yeah. Which again, I'm not saying I am necessarily right, just like you're saying, or still working through it. But I would argue, one, yeah, that Romans isn't speaking to a document, but the people that are put in place. And I would argue that even with our document, I mean, I agree with you. I think we should, our government gives us the right to hold our government accountable to the Constitution. And we do that to the extent that we have that right to do that. And so we take the means that we've been given. We take the, you know, whether it's through the courts or whatever it may be, through peaceful protest. And we do what we can to hold our government accountable to that Constitution. But ultimately, what is that Constitution worth if those in positions of power are not upholding the Constitution? So don't take our word for it. Search the scriptures and be a Berean, a blue-collar Berean.
Join us next time.